Good morning, 6:38, News Radio 92.3, AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Joining us by phone, as she does every single Thursday at this time, Janice Gilley. She is the Escambia County Administrator. Janice, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Great to have you. One of the things that I wanted to talk about with you, kind of, I think it's a good news story of sorts, is you guys have finally launched, I don't say finally like you should have been doing it long ago, but you have decided to launch a dashboard for COVID-19 information from the county, right?
Yes, sir, we have. We're trying to make sure that we have accurate information, which, as you know, has been a little difficult in the sense that information is so fluid these days. And so that was part of our concern, was to make sure that we would have the opportunity to have the most accurate, up-to-date information that we could provide. And, you know, I think that every bit of information that we can provide is probably helpful for folks. But I don't want folks to think that, you know, whenever we provide the information that it's an answer to this COVID. You know, everyone still needs to mask up, try and social distance, you know, keep their hands clean and things like that. So, you know, it's important to have information and dashboards, but it's also important to make sure that you heed all the advice that you're being given by medical professionals, CDC, and everyone else, to continue to protect yourself.
No, absolutely. And it's definitely one of these things where we're so used to having power. You know, we're so used to understanding and having solutions, especially as Americans in a scientific age. We're so used to that when we come up against something that we can't control, barely understand, and are afraid of, it's a little overwhelming. And so a lot of times what we want is we want information, because information makes us feel like we have power, even if it doesn't really change the fact that, like you said, we ought to social distance, wash hands, and mask up. You know, that's the basics.
Yeah.
But this other stuff kind of makes us feel like we know what's going on, even if we can't really control things very well.
Yeah, and I did want to mention one thing that we want to make sure is continually emphasized. There is a lot of conversation about ICU beds and the availability of ICU beds, which is part of the dashboard, which is part of the information that has been available for weeks. But I just want to make sure that folks are aware. We've been told by numerous sources that any bed in a hospital can be turned into an ICU bed with the proper, you know, tools and things like that need to be utilized in a room. So, I want folks to know that I don't believe we're anywhere near that capacity for folks to be worried. And then if we did have a med surge, all the hospitals have a plan. And then we also have another plan for another facility to be utilized if it was so needed. So we are, I would say, a really long way away from that kind of crisis. So I really would ask people to, you know, just stay calm and, you know, try and make sure that they manage their families, manage their work, and, you know, try and stay, like we said, clean and social distance and things like that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, this is the same thing. In fact, I've played some of the clips of you saying this, and we've talked about Eric Gilmore saying this and the hospital administrator saying this. And I have tried to get people to understand this exact same thing, that, you know, hospitals try to operate near capacity because they're obviously industries that want to have waste. ICU beds can be converted. The stat can look scary if you don't understand it and if somebody doesn't explain it very well. So we try to explain exactly what you were saying, plus that external surge capacity like the Navy Hospital or the UWF Fieldhouse or even, you know, theoretically the Bay Center. I mean, it had to happen, right? And even as the news keeps telling people, oh, in this one place they're at capacity, I don't know whether they really are or not, but I know we're not overwhelmed like New York was at one time, and that's unfortunately, that's the picture people get in their head, and we're nowhere close to that. I also wanted to ask you, we've had some, you know, outbreak issues at the jail, and there's been some testing.
Mm-hmm.
But even there, the significance of those cases, it doesn't seem to be that much. And people, it's not like you're testing everybody, because it doesn't even make sense necessarily to test everybody. Is that right?
So what we're doing is, whenever we have a confirmed case or there are symptoms in a unit, we are testing those inmates in that unit. And so we will have another unit be tested today. We did have overnight news from Walton County, our inmates that are over there, 18 of the 50 that were tested, and that was 50 total Walton inmates, if I'm not mistaken, that were tested yesterday. 38 came back positive. and 18 of those were Escambia County. Our chief has been in touch with Walton County to ensure that our inmates there are getting the best care if they need it. We've not been notified of any in particular that have symptoms. So at this point, we are still hopeful that the inmates that we have over there are asymptomatic, as are most of the inmates that we have here in our jail. The other thing is, you know, we have set up a what I would say is a hotline. We always have a line where you can get information at the jail about, you know, your loved ones that may be there or someone that you know is there. And we have beefed up the staffing to ensure that we're available and able to answer any questions that folks may have about anyone that they know that's in the jail. The other thing I would mention is that we have been in close contact with the courts over the last several months, doing our best to try and make sure that nonviolence and other types of, you know, offenses are, we're trying our best to keep them, you know, from overwhelming the jail population. You know, and the courts are overwhelmed, as you can imagine, because they're not able to be in session all the time. However, they have been extremely helpful in trying to help us, you know, reduce the number of folks that need to be in the jail, that need to be in there.
Do you know, you had kind of mentioned this, I think, at one time, that the Bay Center was being explored as an alternate test site to bring people inside during the summer heat. Has that progressed at all, or do we know?
It is progressing. I have not seen a final contract yet between the Department of Health and the Bay Center. I did ask about it yesterday, and I did not get a final answer on terms of when that would be progressing, but I do know that we are working through that actual contract.
Okay.
So I'm hopeful that it can start soon.
Janice, one of the things I had understood is yesterday EMS had a good day in the sense that they were able to find somebody who had been missing, and kind of a cool story. Can you tell us what happened?
Yes, these folks are out there every single day looking after us, and these two EMTs and paramedics, Courtney Kuhn and Andre Thompson, were actually out there to actually respond to a call, and while they were on the call, they realized that the young female that was part of the incident was actually someone that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office had posted on their Facebook as a missing juvenile. And so they were able to contact the sheriff's office while they were in the middle of the call and be able to get the young lady to the back of the ambulance into an air-conditioned area and be able to take care of her. And so, you know, these folks aren't only out there saving your lives, they're hopefully saving this young lady from, you know, we just don't know for sure what exactly was going on with that situation. And, you know, we're so thankful that the sheriff's office would be so responsive. And then also the fact that they posted it in the first place to help our folks be able to know who to look for. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that that I've said from the very beginning of this COVID situation. Our employees are out there working every single day to maintain the services that our community continues to rely on. And it's not easy. And, yes, they are now contracting, you know, COVID, whether it be from their families or other, you know, other exposure. But for the most part, they are still able to provide these services to our community that are so desperately needed. And I think this is just a wonderful example of the types of people that we have working at EMS and actually, like I said, even corrections. I mean, you know, our first responders and our public health and public safety folks are just amazing in this community.
Yeah, and you know, I think you and I would have to say the same thing, which is it's those folks have become even more essential, and we learned about a whole bunch of other people that are essential workers we didn't even know about, you know, like trash collectors and grocery store workers and, you know, but the people who make the supply chain and meat packers and everybody else, and they are at risk every day in a way that maybe I am not or other people are not because of the nature of the jobs that we do. Hey, last thing, I know sometimes, Janice, you like to ask me a question. So you're one of the more interesting interviews that you do just because, you know, you do it a little bit differently than everyone. I love that. But you sometimes have a question. You have one for me today?
I do. What do you think the price of a ticket at the Baltimore Ravens or the Arrowhead Stadium is going to be when there's like 70,000 seats, but they're only allowing 14,000 to 16,000 people in? You got to guess?
Man. Oh, no. I mean, whatever the retail price is, StubHub is going to explode. I would figure people are going to be paying, what, 10 times? list price because of the demand.
It's going to be more. You have the battle of the Super Bowl champions against the MVP, so it's going
to
be
plus the notoriety of being able to say I went to that particular, you know, that first game. I mean, yeah, no, you're right. That's going to it's buy them fast if you can and resell them if you want to. It's a good I guess I'm not giving you investment advice, but it's, you know, it's there. Which, by the way, I
might be better than stocks.
Yeah, that's right. And I hate to admit it, but I have to be honest about this. When the All-Star game for baseball came to Phoenix in 2011, I thought, oh man, I'm gonna make so much money. I'm gonna buy me some tickets. I'm gonna resell them. I lost like $1,000.
Oh my god!
No, because nobody. I mean, it just wasn't a demand thing, and you had to pay for the whole week's worth of events. I mean, it was like, oh, I got it. Oh, I don't got it. So maybe don't take my ticket scalping advice.
Well, I just think having fans there. Yeah, I just think having fans there is going to be fantastic, because I don't know if you've seen any of the soccer games in Europe, but not having fans there is definitely a different experience.
Oh, yeah. No, NASCAR, they can do it. I'm not sure about football and soccer and that kind of stuff. Janice Gilley, she is the Escambia County Administrator. Always a pleasure, Janice. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for what you do.
All right. Mask up when you're out.